If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Hello and welcome to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. Today on the show, Thomas Lukaszek, the former Deputy Premier of Alberta, joins us on the phone to discuss a whole host of political topics. Thomas, how are you doing here today?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. Pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure to have you on the phone here today, Thomas. First, lots of content to talk about when it comes to Alberta politics. But the big one that I wanted to touch on was your thoughts on Rachel Notley stepping down as leader of the NDP.
Well, obviously, a monumental shift, not only for the NDP party, but for the province. Rachel has built up a brand. She was the first NDP in the history of this province to ever form government in Alberta. A political force to reckon with a great political pedigree. So she will be missed by NDP for sure. And it will be a big vacuum on a political scene in Alberta. She was a politician that was very well recognized. And even though, you know, some may have not agreed with her politics, she was generally respected.
How do you feel the NDP is faring going into a leadership race?
You know, I think leadership changes are an opportunity, if you look at it that way. I think this gives NDP an opportunity to rebrand a little from an ideological perspective, at least. Rachel represented the historical NDP because of her father, so she stuck to very traditional NDP values, which obviously are rejected predominantly in rural Alberta and in parts of Calgary. So whoever the new leader is, they will be able to reposition NDP more towards a centrist party, but still hold true to core NDP values. So I think we will see some rebranding and shifting of NDP into the future.
Who would be your pick for leader?
You know, there are some names being tossed around. No one has really declared yet, so it's hard to pick. I think unfortunately, in political leadership races, you have to check off a lot of boxes to qualify. So, you know, it isn't always the best person, but it's the person who is most electable. And often those can be two different things. So, looking at the names currently that are being tossed around, I think Ms. Raki Pancholi is a good candidate, a labor lawyer, but represented school boards. She is a young mom with some experience already under her belt. So there is one. I understand that Ms. Sarah Hoffman may be running. She has cabinet experience as well, but maybe not so representative of possible rebranding. So I think we will have some surprise names still entering into this race. So it's hard to predict right now.
Meanwhile, Premier Danielle Smith met with Tucker Carlson recently. Do you have any thoughts on the Premier meeting with such a polarizing figure from south of the border?
Well, I am not surprised that she did that because it's really on brand for her. But I have to tell you, I am very concerned, and this is a nonpartisan comment. I am very concerned as a Canadian, not only as an Albertan. And it's not only that she met only with him, but she met with Conrad Black and other extremely polarizing, controversial individuals, all on the same stage. And unfortunately, by sitting on that stage with them and endorsing them, and the next day boasting on social media how happy she is that she met with them, she really is endorsing everything that they are saying. And I have to say, you know, I don't care where you are on political spectrum, unless you are, you know, really, really on the fringes of political thought, you would not want some of the stuff that they stand for and they are saying endorsed by a premier. I am concerned that her endorsing what they stand for is going to lead to more divisions in our country. And unfortunately, you know, some people take it a little bit too far. And it creates a real danger in Alberta and in Canada.
Do you have any thoughts on Carlson's comments on Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party as a whole?
Well, look, you know, how can a premier of a Canadian province, of any province at any time, sit on a stage where her guest, a person she's very proud of having there, is really calling our premier gay? Now, first of all, why would the term gay be used as an insult? You know, that in itself is pathetic. But how dare anybody accuse anyone of being either gay or straight or anything? How is this anybody's business? And how can a premier sit there and endorse that? And then at the end of the entire spectacle, express her satisfaction with everything that has happened. You know, this is it's outside of the parameters of what is considered to be even marginally normal. You know, this is a premier that acts like a groupie, and you know, and somebody who gathers crowds, and the only reason he gathers crowds, it's like WWF wrestling. People go there, you know, because you know it's going to be a gong show, and she attaches herself to it. But I don't underestimate our premier's intellect. You know, a lot of the things she has said prior to meeting with Tucker and the cast of characters on that stage align very well with, you know, what she says. You know, he openly endorses Russia and doesn't want to help Ukraine. Well, Danielle Smith had the very same thoughts until she, as a premier, had to sort of moderate her thoughts because the Ukrainian community confronted her on it. You know, he had the same thoughts on vaccinations and Jews and you name it. So, you know, both of them have actually said similar things at different times. So the fact that they are sitting on the same stage is not a surprise. But now she is a premier. And when you have individuals coming here, and really what he was doing is trying to rile up the masses to protest. And at the same time, when the premier says that, for example, Canadian Federal Minister of Environment should have a target on his back, you know, this is dangerous because there are people out there who are listening to you and me, to every word, and they take things literally. And when leaders, and what leaders say matters, when leaders say such things, you know, some people take it a little bit too far. Some people take it literally. And then, you know, a person like Danielle Smith cannot wash her hands off of it. It is time for political leaders to argue on policy with each other. But for goodness sakes, let's not put targets on each other's back. Let's not call each other's sexuality out and mock each other, you know, on personal level. Is this who we are? Is this the kind of politics that we want?
We'll be back with more from Thomas Lukaszek next on Fort McMurray Matters. Yeah. Welcome back to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. Thomas Lukaszek is back on the line with us. Alberta just had an election last spring. How do you feel the political climate has changed nearly 1 year after that election?
Well, it's night and day. And you know, I have lived through this twice now. Once as an elected member, as deputy premier, that's when the Wild Rose Party, led by Danielle Smith, became the official opposition. And I tell you, the legislature has shifted overnight. All of a sudden, it became politics of gotcha, you know, checking each other's receipts and recording each other after hours and going after elected officials' families. And, you know, it really got ugly and personal to the point where a lot of people said, I'm not running again, or I'm not running for office, because this is not the kind of job being a politician should be, to now when she actually became a premier. You know, I am surprised that the UCP cabinet and caucus are sitting silently, because usually by this time, individual MLAs would stand up and say, you know, this is inappropriate. I can't support the premier in this. But she's making a lot of very controversial comments. She is now trying to appeal to take back Alberta TBA, who has taken over her entire board of directors on the party. And she's trying to play to her, you know, to her political base, who tend to be anti any government, sort of anarchist type of a movement, very libertarian type of a movement. And she's trying to play into that crowd. And unfortunately, being a premier, you just cannot do that. But she personally identifies with those values. So it's very easy for her to make those comments. But I think even in rural Alberta, she's starting to lose support, because, you know, fiery rhetoric and getting people aroused and you know, saying F Trudeau is one thing. But at the end of the day, people still want their emergencies and hospitals in rural Alberta, and that is falling apart. People want basic services, and those are in our province in jeopardy right now. So, you know, people don't want her tinkering with Canada Pension Plan. So, you know, she still has this momentum because of her fiery comments and speeches, but pretty soon she will be judged on the results, and those just aren't there.
Do you feel Alberta will be stuck on a two-party system for a while here?
I think so. And that's unfortunate for democracy, because our parliamentary system, you know, the British parliamentary system is actually designed for several parties, not just for two. But I think so, because there is really nothing that we've become so polarized. That you're either part of Team A or Team B. The unfortunate part with the conservative movement, as you should call it, many conservatives, traditional conservatives, no longer identify themselves with UCP, because UCP has become something that frankly isn't conservative, because they are very much into setting up crown corporations and having actually quite a significant role of government. But they're definitely not progressive conservatives. So there are many progressive conservatives, not only from the Lougheed era, but even from Ralph Klein and Ed Stelmach and Getty era, who are not finding themselves comfortable in UCP, but definitely don't identify themselves as NDP. And that is why I'm going back to my earlier comment. I think NDP has an opportunity here. If they do a little bit of rethink, they may be able to appeal to some of the progressive conservatives who still have, you know, your traditional conservative values, but are considered to be centrist on social issues, you know, who want to participate, who do not want to not vote, but have to feel comfortable with where they're placing their vote. And in the last election, actually, you know, including myself, large number of progressive conservatives saw themselves more identifying with NDP than UCP.
And on that note, would you ever consider running again?
I don't think so. You know, I'm being asked, and I never say never, because circumstances may be such where I feel compelled to do so. I've done this for nearly 15 years, and I've been fortunate to hold several cabinet positions, and including deputy premier. But if I do, it would be against the advice of my family, because they know what it's like to be with someone who is elected, but only because I think that I can contribute something that would lead towards stabilizing the politics in this province. But at this point in time, it's not on my agenda.
I also wanted to ask, and you did touch on this a little earlier, but the Alberta Health Services situation and the UCP's plan to kind of dismantle it, and how that could impact things.
Well, you know, again, there is the speeches, and then there is the reality. And unfortunately, our premier, you know, being an ex-radio anchor, is good at delivering speeches that rally up the crowd, and she's playing on anger and discontent. So she's telling them basically what they want to hear, and that means find an enemy somewhere else, blame them for everything, and tell them that we will do better. Now, the problem is that she made promises that to anyone who understands anything about politics or healthcare, right off the bat, you knew that this is simply unrealistic. She promised to fix the healthcare system within 90 days. Well, 90 days times four has passed by, and unfortunately, particularly in rural Alberta, healthcare system is deteriorating at an unprecedented rate. Alberta doctors were just polled, and I believe it is 40% of Alberta doctors are seriously taking steps and looking at leaving this province. So, you know, that is not a good situation. So then she appointed Dr. Cowell, who was supposed to fix healthcare within a very short period of time. Well, we haven't heard from Dr. Cowell now for about, you know, probably 4 months. And she decentralized, I should say, Alberta healthcare, you know, creating all these sort of new boards. So a lot of tinkering, but at the end of the day, people are now up to 14 hours in emergencies. And healthcare is something we hold dear to ourselves. So when we see, instead of improvement, deterioration, when we see at the same time when she's sort of introducing private sector and appointing Dr. Lyle Olberg, you know, a doctor who hasn't practiced medicine for literally 30, maybe 40 years, but all he does is builds private for-profit hospitals in Asia and private labs. You know, it shows where she wants to go with healthcare. Now, if we could see some measurable improvements, maybe we could give her a benefit of doubt. But, you know, unfortunately, the opposite is the truth. So introducing private sector to healthcare and at the same time seeing an ongoing deterioration is going to be a political problem for her. You know, this rhetoric will only get her so far.
Premier Smith seemed pretty adamant in the articles that I've seen that the changes she wants made would possibly lengthen careers in nursing, paramedics, and doctors, because I believe she said that the average career for nursing in Alberta is 2 years. For paramedics, people are leaving after an average of five.
Well, and you'll find that the same thing in teaching. As a matter of fact, the career length of teachers has dropped significantly. Teachers are just dropping out. Now, you have to ask yourself why. It is not because of the pay, because the pay is good. It could always probably be better, at least nurses and paramedics will tell you. But they are not getting often into this career because they want to get rich, and they're not leaving because it doesn't pay enough. Because you will, if you track them, you'll find that a lot of them actually take other jobs later that pay even less. It is about job satisfaction, and it is about burnout rate. And, you know, I have to tell you, I had the unfortunate pleasure of spending a couple of days in hospital a number of months ago. Nothing serious, thankfully. But I had a sort of an inside perspective on watching, you know, the system work and nurses. And I tell you, they work hard. I would not want to be a nurse. It's a pretty tough job. So the burnout rate is pretty high over there. But they also look at the politics. And if they see that their job is not appreciated, when they see that their job is possibly on a chopping block, when there is no political support, you know, they're sort of the only ones left out there. When now they're fighting to keep emergencies open because they are on the front lines. You know, when people show up at emergency and they wait 14 hours, guess whom they are yelling at? Not at the premier, you know, at the reception people and the nurses. So the job definitely is becoming more and more difficult as the system becomes more and more strained and as patients are becoming more and more impatient. You know, doctors are hearing it from their patients because their results from tests are not coming back. People are living in anxiety, knowing whether they do or not knowing whether they do or don't have a cancer. They're waiting for results for months. That puts a human strain on healthcare workers. So I don't see how anything she's doing right now in any way will prolong those careers. I would say it'll do exactly the opposite, because this sort of chaos and lack of respect that was introduced into the system is another reason why somebody would want to leave the system. And the problem with nurses and doctors is that their careers are very portable. You know, they can work tomorrow in the United States if they choose to do so, or in another province. You know, bringing foreign doctors from other countries into Canada is difficult, but our doctors who are trained in our Western North American education system are sought after throughout the world and can make a lot more money. So we have to take good care of our healthcare workers if we want to attract them and retain them in this province.
Coming up, more from my conversation with Thomas Lukaszek on Fort McMurray Matters. And we're back on Fort McMurray Matters. I'm your host, Ryan McNally. Thomas Lukaszek once again joins us on the phone.
Switching gears a little bit here, do you have any thoughts on on Alberta potentially leaving the Canada Pension Plan?
Well, you know, obviously by far, most Albertans don't want that. There is nothing wrong with the Canada Pension Plan. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm in the world of finance right now, so I watch performance of wealth funds, not only in Canada, but across the world. And the Canada Pension Plan Fund is one of the best managed funds if you judge management by the rate of return. They're getting phenomenal rates of return for the last couple of decades. For example, compared to Alberta's AIMCO, to which those funds would be transferred. As a matter of fact, AIMCO managed to lose money during time periods when Canada Pension Plan was making pretty decent return on investment. So from a financial perspective and wealth fund management perspective, it makes no sense whatsoever. But the question is why? You know, pension plans, much like your RRSPs and your savings in the bank, should be invested where you get the best return on investment, because that means your pension is safe and you will be getting more of it. And that's what the Canada Pension Plan does. Bringing it closer to Alberta and into AIMCO, the real reason why the Premier wants it here is so we can make political decisions on where that money is invested. So if oil and gas need propping because they're not doing well as a business, we will use those funds to prop them. Well, that's exactly the opposite of what you want with your pension investment to be done. Because you don't want to be investing into industries that are suffering. You want to be investing into industries actually that are prospering. So investment funds, particularly long-term pension funds, should never be invested for political reasons. They should only exclusively be independently invested for monetary, fiscal return on investment. So that's a problem, but no one really ever wanted it. You know, as government, progressive conservative government, since Lougheed days, we looked at several things. We looked at pension plans being brought to Alberta. We looked at the provincial police force. And every time we did a study, it just simply made no sense. You don't have the critical mass. You know, Alberta is just over 4 million people, hardly a city in most places in the world. Why would we want to have all those services duplicated when the ones we have perform really well? You know, in the case of policing, there is room for improvement across Canada, not just in Alberta. But in the case of CPP, it's one of the best managed pension plans in the world. Why would you want to bring it to Alberta and create the whole bureaucratic, chaotic mess of now transferring if you're moving out of Alberta? And if you want to attract and retain workers to this province from across Canada, why would someone in Ontario who is part of a national CPP program want to abandon all that and come to Alberta to buy into our provincial plan, which really has no track record? You know, none of this makes any sense, pragmatically speaking. But this is, again, part of her brand, because this is another wedge that of separatism from Ottawa. This is another way to stick it to Trudeau. You know, anything that in any way shows a way of wedging ourselves against Ottawa is something that she will promote. And that's unfortunate because, you know, in general, I have the honor and pleasure of traveling a little and actually working with foreign governments and other countries, European countries, look at us and at how well we work. You know, we are being used as examples for many policies throughout the world, but we, for some reason here in Alberta, see Canada as a sort of an underachiever from which we need to separate. You know, this whole talk on the stage with Carlson about inflation, you know, that, that Trudeau and federal government and Canada overall is to be blamed from inflation. That's why Alberta should separate. But for goodness sake, we have the lowest level of inflation of all the developed countries in the world. You know, this is the last thing that, that we should be complaining about. You know, inflation is never good, but we have the lowest one after COVID and after everything that has happened. But selling this mythology of Canada being broken and we somehow need to use radical means of fixing it, which includes even separating, seems to be selling to people who perhaps are not as happy as they used to be, because of various economic reasons. And this is a very simple explanation for something that is much more complicated. And it resonates itself. And that's why she's doing it.
On another note, the $10 a day childcare agreement has become a fairly hot button issue. Some childcare centers saying Alberta's plan could financially destroy the sector. I guess, what's your response?
Well, you know, child health care has been a problem in this province for decades, even during our government. And I'll tell you, I'll be the first one to tell you, we didn't do the right things either. The problem with child care right now is that if you have more than two kids, it really makes no sense for people to go to work, because daycare now will cost you about $1,000 a child. So if you have to pay, let's say, for three kids, $3,000 a month for daycare, you know, how many people earn that much money? You might as well stay home and raise your kids yourselves and have the satisfaction of doing so, and perhaps not be that much financially impacted. So our current structure of child care simply doesn't work. Plus, there are a lot of quality of care issues as well compared to the rest of, for example, to European Union, where daycares actually have some sort of curriculum and they prepare kids for grade one. And there is an actual program that kids follow from both, a personal development perspective, and some academics already introduced. So there's a lot of work to be done. But indeed, you know, I firmly support the federal plan of universal daycare, subsidy. I wish it was tested for income, because, you know, if I can afford it, I should pay it. There should be some kind of a means test. But unfortunately, again, this has become a wedge issue. Because it is seen in Alberta that if it goes through and works, it would be a win for Ottawa. Not a win for parents, but a win for Ottawa. And I think from a political perspective, actually, in Alberta, we should be the province that is actually working the hardest to make this work, because we, frankly, are the only province who is looking desperately towards attracting and retaining workers. We need workers in this province. So if we need workers in this province, we need to create a support infrastructure so workers can go to work. And daycare is one of the key ways to create employment and to send people to work so they have a place to leave their kids at. So we should be actually collaborating very closely with Ottawa on this one, because there are a lot of workers right now who can't go to work because they can't afford childcare. But if they had affordable childcare, you know, they would be employed and paying taxes over here. So, again, this is, you know, this is the disconnect that we have between Alberta and sort of this populist political movement and reality. I find that politicians in this part of the world figured out that you can actually score more political points on bashing democracy, Ottawa, science, medical doctors, particularly Trudeau, than you do actually doing a good job as a politician and addressing real issues. You get more points by simply being a loudmouth than a person who gets things done. So that's, you know, that's where we politicians go. We go where the votes are, and this is an easy way of getting votes. Now, I am hoping that Albertans and Canadians will wake up and say, okay, well, this was a lot of fun. We did a lot of screaming and name calling, but where are we at? what is our economy how is our economy doing? What is our healthcare system? How is it performing? How is our education system? And we will start evaluating those whom we elected based on performance, and not only, you know, how fiery their speeches are and how much they hate somebody in Ottawa.
Former Deputy Premier Thomas Lukaszczyk, thank you so much for the time here today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
That was our show for today. Big thank you to Thomas Lukaszczyk for joining us here to discuss a wide array of political topics. We'll have another busy show lined up for tomorrow, so I hope you can join us for that. Thanks for listening to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm Ryan McNally.